All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Doug Thornton. This is American Vindicta. We're going to go over a bit of the news today. Starting off, let's talk about something everyone else is talking about, the shooter from Illinois, Robert Cremo. Now, currently, I'm working on a little project that should be on the YouTube and Rumble channels tonight. And that's going to be involving a breakdown of the shooting, a breakdown of the different videos that I was able to find from the shooter. A lot of really weird, crazy stuff. And here's the thing that I've found so far is that starting with the New York subway shooter and then go to the Buffalo, New York shooter, then the Uvalde shooter, and now this weirdo from Illinois, the shooters get progressively more extreme in their ideologies as we go on. That could be for various reasons. That could just be happenstance. But there's a lot of connections here that I've noticed in between each shooter that I'm working on currently. Weird numerology things that each one of these guys had. Unsurprisingly, every one of these shooters thus far have been known by law enforcement, or at least known by the FBI. And to make things even better, to get back on topic with the Highland Park shooter, he was wearing women's clothing while he was shooting. So is this a second attack upon public by someone who is a transsexual, transvestite, whatever they want to call themselves? Is this guy a leftist? Is he a right winger? Well, the problem is when you go through the discerning this information, and I am probably like most other people will tell you that this guy is Antifa. Obviously, he has a tremendous amount of psychological problems. He had a very bad problem at home. His mother, from what I've been reading so far, completely neglected him growing up, which that can cause trauma. That can cause an already tormented child reaching out, wanting that affection, needing that attention, and not getting it to go to other places and other people, other things like narcotics, barbiturates, alcohol, leading into crime, gang relations, because there's a close proximity with gangs and a form of esprit de corps and brotherhood there, and also lacking a strong father figure. And I have some articles here pulled up. This one's off of InfoWars. So here we go. Deputy Chief Christopher Cavelli said Tuesday that police believe Cremo pre-planned this attack for several weeks. And I concur. From the videos that I found so far, he was obviously scoping out this area. He was obviously planning this for a while. And you'll see that with quite a few of the shooters. When I broke down the Buffalo, New York shooter, he had visited that site multiple times. And that's not uncommon for shooters to do stuff like that. They will commonly visit the place that they're going to be attacking multiple times. They'll do what we call dry runs or walkthroughs. They will be writing down all the different information, or they'll be taking photographs and video of all the different information, the layouts of the area, how many people are there, at what point in time is the highest amount of foot traffic, so that they know the proper times of when to attack and when to potentially withdraw. They'll know the exits. They'll know how to block them if possibly. They'll know the cameras if need be. They'll even check on the routes that law enforcement are taking within the area. And they'll scope it out. And they're always going to find the easiest place to attack. They're going to find the soft targets. They're not going to hit the hard target. Incredibly deranged people go after law enforcement with violence, with guns, incredibly deranged people, or very hardened criminals who are confident in their skills and don't want to be caught. People, however, who want to prey upon others, who merely just want to hurt other people, will go out into the middle of a venue or an area where there's a large amount of people, and that's where they will attack. They will always attack the innocent, the most helpless, and it'll always be a time when you never expect it, and then it goes off. Like the Boston bombing goes off, like Uvalde, like every school shooting that we've seen. I don't need to get into it for you guys. You already know what I'm talking about. This one, of course, hits home to a lot of people because it was Independence Day. It's 4th of July. And you've probably seen this year so far all over the news just how many of the leftists are saying don't celebrate Independence Day. Don't get involved. It was a horrible day, blah, blah, blah. What we see right now is a radicalized group of people in America who feed upon their own fears that are pushed by the politicians, who are coerced by their political leaders, they're coerced by their educational leaders into doing very horrific things. And what these people do, this the leadership of these groups, is that they pick mentally deranged people, sometimes people that are mentally ill, sometimes people that are actually mentally handicapped. I've experienced that plenty of times, especially with Antifa. Antifa will always use someone who's mentally handicapped to cause harm and allow that person to be caught. And I think that's no different than what we're seeing right now. This kid was very deranged. He had a lot of problems. There's a lot of similarities with this kid and the Colorado Aurora movie shooter, the Joker theater shooter. There's a lot of similarities in here, but you can tell by the videos from watching this kid that he didn't have many friends. He didn't have many people to talk to. He got caught up in this, you know, rap culture, gang culture type of mentality. I don't know what it was that he was pretending that he was, but you could see it whenever he would record it. And he would record things with his rap music. And I'm not against rap music. I don't care for it too much. And I don't care if you listen to it. I'm just telling you the way that I'm seeing this is that he got caught up in this culture, and then the flip of the coin, and you'll see this in the videos tonight, he goes from wanting to have a music video about whatever his problems are or whatever it is that he's talking to or who he's talking to completely violent, very dark, very militant. This kid had demons. This kid had a serious spiritual problem. And as Steve Quell would say, there is no physical solution for a spiritual problem. But there is always, at some point in time, a physical outcome where these people will act upon their feelings. They'll target the innocent people, or they'll target law enforcement as a suicide by cop, which is in one of his videos that he's created where he's killed by law enforcement. It says here that Robert Cremo's mom, and this is from a Twitter feed, that Cremo appears to be a very mentally disturbed individual who came from a very dysfunctional home. Let's just start that off. But Robert Cremo's mom apparently is a attention-starved woman who was recently arrested for domestic battery, who hasn't posted a picture of her son since he was little, She claims to be a holistic healer and a massage therapist and wants to go to church with you. She looks a little bit like something that rhymes with the letter four, but I'll leave that one to your own imagination. And other reports, the coaches actually said that were coaches for this kid, Robert Cremo, in high school, said that his parents were actually the main problem here. So we'll get into that right after this. A local news station, WGN-TV, reports that on Monday that he was known to law enforcement before the attack. So let me dive off into something here. If someone is known to law enforcement, what does that mean? Well, that means that law enforcement has picked you up somewhere, most likely in a chat room, that has seen you on a Discord or on Reddit, Facebook, Twitter, whatever, and they are documenting that you are talking about malicious things, talking about hurting people. And, you know, I don't want to get into that whole thing, but once you start getting checked by law enforcement, hey, this guy could be potentially dangerous, what are the steps that law enforcement can take? Not much, not really. You know, besides watching you, you do see FBI with some very horrible and failed attempts at times at trying to get people that are mentally deranged to commit acts of violence so that they can arrest them. That's happened. Sometimes it's actually a good thing where they actually do catch terrorists in the act and say, hey, you know, we'll provide the ammunition or we'll provide the explosives. Just come meet me at XYZ Street at this time of day. And then, you know, boom, they catch a guy who's been on a terrorism watch list. But that's kind of rare. And I'm not saying that the FBI doesn't do good work at that, or at least they used to, until they became so politicized that they became one of the biggest enemies of we the people. I mean, clarify that for everybody. But he was known to law enforcement. Law enforcement couldn't do very much about it. He had already been in a domestic already, had to be called out by law enforcement to come to his home and deal with him once already. And it's because of the red flag laws that will be coming, law enforcement will be able to do pre-crime. And that's a dangerous thought. If anybody knows of the movie Minority Report, pre-crime is more or less where, you know, you start talking about wanting to go and do this, and I wish I could blow this place up, and I wish I could kill this person, and I expletive hurt other people or the government, and now you're on a watch list. And if you're reported and that's used against you, well, then a judge will take everything from you, every gun that you've ever owned, and probably not give them back. So that's the future of red flag laws. But let's carry on here. Cremo was a prolific poster online where he apparently went by the name Awake the Rapper. His videos foretell his alleged violent acts, which is very true. In one, he appears to dramatize a school shooting. In another video, Cremo appears to animate his own demise in a confrontation with police. Police said the 22-year-old suspect was known to law enforcement. One question that will be asked in the coming days, were they aware of the violent videos that have been online for many months? Illinois has some of the strictest gun control in the entire countries. Red flag laws, waiting periods, licensing requirements, and more. And Joe Biden's a week and a half ago signed into law a new gun control bill, but all their measures failed to stop the attack. And why is that? Well, put simply, all the red flag laws in the world, all the gun control laws, they're not going to stop someone who wants to go out and kill people. If they can't obtain the firearm, then they'll use a sharp-edged or a blunt weapon. You know, they'll use a bat, stick, a rock, a tool, you know, crowbar, whatever, hammer, axe, you know, whatever your imagination is, it doesn't just have to be the rifle or the pistol. But one thing I've said over and over again, there's a reason why they only care about killers who use rifles and pistols, because that's what they want to take away from us. The government could care less how many rocks you have in your possession. The government could care less how many pointy sticks you have in your possession. Yet you could go to Dollar General and with enough hairspray and a few other components could make a freaking bomb, but they're not going to take any of that stuff away. You could go to Home Depot and make chemical weapons if you wanted to, but they're not going to take any of that stuff away either. Here's an article from Fox News. The parents of accused Highland Park, Illinois shooter Robert Bobby Cremo III were a problem and always the last to pick him up from his after-school sports program, the suspect's former coach told Fox News Digital. Quote, I remember the parents more than him because they were kind of a problem. There wasn't a lot of love in that family. And this is a coach, Jeremy Canman, who ran an after-school sports program at Lincoln Elementary School. The accused shooter is in police custody after allegedly gunning down revelers at the high school or at the Highland Park July 4th parade, killing at least 6 people and injuring more than 36. So at the shooting, he shot from an elevated position. There's about one story up on a on the top of a store. Now, does that mean that he had military training? No. Now, you can learn through video games, through watching movies. You could probably research what's the best way to ambush somebody, or in the terms of the military, what's the best way to have a complex ambush? And there's probably pamphlets all around out there that tells you, you know, gain the high ground. So that's what he did. He also wore a disguise, dressed in women's clothing. And he's a little bitty skinny guy. So, you know, and he had long hair or at least a wig on. So, you know, hindsight not being 2020 here, but I could see if I was responding law enforcement and he ditched the weapon, apparently, that was found at the scene. If a little skinny guy dressed as a girl runs by me, I'm probably not going to consider him to be a threat. So, let's consider this. Cremo was 9 or 10 when he was enrolled in Kamen's Nerf football program, along with his younger brother. Every week, the Cremos were the last kids there, and we'd have to call their parents to pick them up. The former coach said, speaking of Cremo's dad, Bob Cremo, who was 58, and his mom, Denise Pacina, who's 48. The kid was really quiet, really soft-spoken, never made an issue. That's what his coach is saying about him. The mother, Pacina, however, was a handful, he said. She got into it once with one of the heads of the program she was yelling at, and it seemed like her kids were a nuisance to her. The accused shooter, who was an aspiring rapper, grew up with his parents, younger brother, and older sister on McDaniels Avenue in Highland Park outside of Chicago. Under the stage name Awake the Rapper, Cremo posted disturbing music videos that featured drawings of stick figures wearing tactical gear, carrying out an attack with a rifle, and a newspaper clipping about Lee Harvey Oswald, who assassinated John F. Kennedy. So in one of the videos, and I'll be showing it later, it's right behind his right shoulder. There is the paper that talks about Lee Harvey Oswald and the Kennedy assassination right behind him. So, you know, is that something as like a clue? Would that be something that is stuck in his psyche somehow that helped him carry out these types of attacks. There are multiple videos of him being at MAGA rallies, at least one where he was actually at the airport awaiting Donald Trump. And it's obviously the presidential convoy. And, you know, he's there videotaping himself. It makes me think, was he planning something against the president? Possibly. Let's see. A neighbor says that the signs were there for a long time. There was always police cars at the house. The parents were arguing and fighting all the time. Once again, here we go. Another symptom of a lot of these active shooters is the broken home. That seems to be very common, the broken home. The mother, Pacina, is a self-proclaimed energy healer with her company called Trilogy Energy Systems, according to her Facebook page. A energy healer. So new age. She's new agey. His father once ran for mayor and had a local sandwich shop, Bob's Pantry and Deli, that has since shut down. Another neighbor says he was so nice. He always gave the kids free candy and treats. The mom seemed unstable while the father was well-liked in the community. At the same time of the shooting, the younger Cremo brother was living with his father and uncle at home in nearby Highwood. Neighbors said Pacina still lived in the Highland Park home, which had become an eyesore in the upscale suburb. Quote, I walk by the house every day. It looks like it should be condemned. The landscaping is 7 feet high. I was thinking to myself the other day, we should really do a welfare check. And that comes from one of the neighbors. Robert Cremo's coach is quoted saying that I'm shocked. Obviously, these things can occur anywhere, anytime, but Highland Park is a very affluent suburb where you don't think things like this will happen. So I heard that also said by the politicians, by the mayor, by the senator, the governor. They all said they didn't expect something like this to happen in a community like Highland Park because it's a upper class, I guess, a higher echelon suburb. I guess that's where all the richy folks go. But the hubris of that, that just because you're in a well-funded area, just because you are in an affluent area, does not mean that crime cannot happen. And I've said this to you guys, and I'll say it again. Every day you walk out that door, you're walking into a war zone. Whether or not you've been shot at or not is irrelevant. The war is still there. The potentiality is still there. These lunatics are everywhere. This kid, Robert Cremo, is just one in a million waiting for his or her turn to get out, get their 5 minutes of fame on the news, and commit horrible acts of murder. Now, one thing that's strange and something that I've mentioned before is that most of the time these active shooters, they're not caught alive. A lot of them will go suicide by cop. A lot of them will commit suicide themselves or will try to get into their epic gunfight and then die that way. This kid was stopped in the middle of a traffic. I don't know if it was a traffic stop. I don't know if they pinged the cell towers to get his location, which is something that law enforcement has the ability to do. Most likely that's how that occurred. But I did watch how they pulled him out of the car. And I have a few things to say about that. This is hindsight 2020, right? But, you know, coming from a cop and looking at it, they pulled this kid out of the car. And, you know, I've been there, done that. Having someone step out of a car on a felony stop. You know, obviously you pull them out, hands up, spread your fingers. Let me see everything on you. Pull your shirt up so I can see around your waist, your waistband, because where do people have weapons? Well, they hide them around their waist where the belt line is. And what kills? The hands kill. So I want to see the hands. I want to see the waist spinning around a couple times just to double check and make sure that there's nothing else being hidden or there's not any type of potential explosive devices put on the person because, hey, those elements of crime are out there as well. You never know when you're going to get the suicide vest. And then they prone the kid out, and at least a dozen officers rush over there. And, you know, like I said, man, I've been there, done that before. Everyone wants to get their gun in on the action. Just remember, if you're law enforcement and you're listening to me and you're doing a felony takedown or anything like that, that we live in a day of age where people will have remote controlled detonators to explosives and they use them, especially against law enforcement. They'll draw you in and from there, boom. So use as many officers as you need. You can have stand back and you can put hard objects in between you. You could have walked the guy to you, which is probably honestly what I would have done. I would have wanted to get this kid as far away from his car as possible. And I would have just had him instruct him to walk himself all the way back towards me. You know, if need be, if we verify that he was unarmed and I have someone that either has a taser ready or a you know, beanbag shotgun round ready, I would blast him if he even moved. But, you know, if the need is there, take the guy away from the car because the car itself could be a weapon. Weapons staged inside the car, last thing you need. And how many times have we seen this on, you know, on the internet lately where the assailant will jump back into the car, dive into the car and will grab a weapon and come back and then confront law enforcement, you know, and being that law enforcement is always under surveillance now and that it's like everybody and their freaking mom wants to sue law enforcement and say that, you know, we're the worst things ever. I get that. But still, hesitation kills. And because of the backlash from the public, the backlash from the politicians, law enforcement has this inherent hesitation to act. It's one of the things that I try to teach people not to be is hesitant, be smart. There's a difference between being smart and tactile and being hesitant. And I think the takedown of the kid was done very well. I could hear audibly everything that the officer was saying for the commands, you know, raise your hands, hold your shirt up, spin around, let me see everything on you and order them to the ground. And, you know, and then you hear law enforcement as they're approaching that arrest team as they're approaching, you move and you will get effing shot, which, hey, right on, man. That's exactly what I would be telling you. I'd probably be screaming it at you. And that's what law enforcement does. We want to instill that fear of God that, hey, you know, stupid, if you move, you're going to catch some brass in the back. You know, that's, like I said, it's a rapidly evolving situation and it puts everybody on their P's and Q's all the time. And I get that, you know, it's dangerous. I see it, but we need to also be aware that once again, we've had another shooter within, you know, a matter of what, a month of the last shooting. So we're probably going to expect that sometime in July or August, you're going to have another shooter. It could be even sooner than that with the copycat shooter syndrome. That's a phenomena that I don't know how to explain very well to people, except that within law enforcement, we always expect that somebody will witness a violent act and they want to harm themselves or harm others, or they want to commit suicide. And by that, they'll go out through a violent means and then they'll witness somebody commit a violent act. And that will give them just enough bravery to go out and do the same thing. You know, so my hat's off to all law enforcement officers that are out there dealing with this. Unlike what happened with Uvalde, I think the police response that happened at Highland Park was very well. I think they did their best. You know, no one is going to be perfect. Law enforcement cannot stand outside with their rifles at the ready position the entire time because, for one thing, the politicians aren't going to let you do that. And two, you're going to get tired and people are going to get scared. So because of that, law enforcement typically has a good presence, which is we always hope that our presence will deter violent acts, but not always. So because there was enough law enforcement already on scene, at least they had the proper response. I think from what I gathered so far, 70 shots were fired. So, you know, that's quite a bit. And if I'm correct when I say this, I believe it was an AR-15. You know, there's nothing I can do about that. It is the most widely used weapon system in the world next to the AK-47. So, you know, these politicians, they get all uppity and they say, oh, the AR-15, the murder weapon, most dangerous gun in the world, or Joe Biden and his 9mm philosophy of blowing a lung out of the body. Obviously, Joe Biden's never seen what a 12-gauge slug does to somebody. But once again, you know, our politicians don't know anything about how to protect you, but they know how to restrict everything. And that's what the Democrats are doing. And they're going to take advantage of every single shooting, every single person that has died from every child, every mother, father, brother, sister, grandmother, grandfather, aunt, uncle, doesn't matter. They don't care. These people do not care about you. If they cared about you, they would take drugs off the street. And by drugs, I mean the issuing of narcotics through the prescription of the medication given to you by doctors. Those drugs create more killers than the weed, than the heroin, than the cocaine, than the methamphetamines. It's the prescription drugs that drives people insane. That and alcohol. Alcohol is one of the biggest killers that's out there, but they're not going to take that away because they get revenue from it. They get taxes from it. They're not going to take away the barbiturates and all the other hallucinogenic drugs because Big Pharma has lobbyists out there that pay Congress to push this stuff out there and to make them untouchable. That's why you can't sue Big Pharma. Now let's read another article. Potential Richmond July 4th mass shooters charged as non-citizens in possession of firearms, say police. Fox News once again. One of the suspects in the thwarted Richmond mass shooting had previously been deported. Wow. Say it isn't so. Before I even get onto this, the border is the biggest danger to this country. Next to the Democrats, the border is the biggest source of danger to our country. If you want to stop human sex slave trafficking, close down the freaking border. If you want to stop illegal terrorist, that means citizens of other countries that are terrorists coming through our border, close down the border. And we know how to close it down. They just won't listen to law enforcement. They won't listen to Border Patrol. Because that, you get stories like this. Two illegal immigrants were arrested in a mass shooting plot at Richmond, Virginia for July 4th celebrations. A hero citizen picked up the phone and overheard a conversation. There was a mass shooting being planned here in the city of Richmond, Virginia, says the chief of police, Gerald Smith. Two illegal immigrants, a 52-year-old Julio Alvarado Dubon and 38-year-old Roman Balacarcel, were arrested and charged with being a non-U.S. citizens in possession of a gun after police uncovered a plot that the duo planned a mass shooting at Richmond's 4th of July celebration on Monday. Does anybody remember when I talked about what happened with the Waukesha parade. And the killer, who is, by the way, probably going to get out of a prison sentence because he was told, advised, to claim that he has a mental problem. So he'll be in a psych ward. Yeah. So, just like what I mentioned then, you need to have situational awareness at all times when you are out in public now. You need to have devices like this tourniquet on you at all times when you are out. Plenty of us get guilty with not taking these devices with us. I know I do at times. But I do always have stuff staged in my truck. Just remember that if you're at an event and your stuff is staged nice and neat in your truck and you're a mile away from it, you might as well be across the world from it if you need a tourniquet. These tourniquets can fit in you know, diaper bags, your wife's purse, put it up, you know, strap it around your leg. They have the little medical kits that you can put around your ankle. You know, it's inconvenient to a lot of people, and I understand that. You know, you want to look cool in your tight skinny jeans and your weird looking shoes. I get that, guys. But you know what looks really bad? It's bleeding to death in front of the ladies. That's not cool. So I highly advise that you don't leave home without the pistola and the tourniquet. Pressure bandages. It's another one. You can have an Israeli bandage. You can have a pressure bandage, a hemostatic bandage. Have something that you can use that if you get a laceration wound or a gunshot wound, that you can hold on it and apply pressure and stop the bleeding, which would be in concurrence with the tourniquet. I've talked about it before, and I'll say it again. Several years ago, when I was on our SRT team, our special response team, for our agency that was in DHS, we were going through all of our medical training. And, you know, it's every time you go through medical training in law enforcement and the military, it always makes you go, damn, I'm not as good as I need to be. You know, and some things are easy. You know, here's a pressure bandage, put it on the wound and just hold it. Okay, that's easy. You know, treating someone for shock, putting them in the recovery position. Okay, that's easy. The tourniquet, though, it's hard to replicate that. And, you know, we would spend 12 hours or more on the range, and we had to hump all of our equipment down to the range, and these were in the mountains in West Virginia. And we had to hump all this gear. And we more or less did it at a fast walk, close to a jog, up and down the mountains. It wasn't very far. It was just a little over a mile. But because of the terrain, it was a real butt kicker. And anywhere in between that time of you trying to catch your breath, complaining about how sore you still are from the last 2 weeks of getting your butt whooped every day, having no breaks, being tired, being hungry, being dehydrated, boom, tourniquet, left arm. And then everybody goes, oh, my God, now we're having a fight to get this tourniquet out. You know, you probably had used it 20 times a day before. You didn't set it up correctly this day. And now you got to fight to pull the stupid thing apart. And clock's ticking. Clock is ticking. You got a minute. But there was one video that we watched where it was a soldier overseas from another country, a Middle East country, shoots a man who was being disorderly, not refusing to listen to commands. And so he gives him a warning shot in the leg with an AK-47, which does what to the body? Well, it perforates quite a large hole into the body. And that's not, you know, that's not good for keeping your blood in you. So to make things worse, because the leg is such a large area and because they were at such a close distance, he had ruptured the femoral artery And within 17 seconds, this man died. He bled out and died. And, you know, the third world countries, third world mindset, man. I don't know how else to say it. But these soldiers just stood there and watched this man bleed to death, laughed. You know, and you can see him pleading. You can see him falling on the ground and flopping back and forth. He started going in and out of unconsciousness, which was what happens after you lose about 3.5 to 4 liters of blood. You start just blacking out, going in and out and in and out. And it was truly scary to watch how fast you can bleed out from the femoral artery. You know, once again, two big arteries that run down both sides of your legs. And so we trained to a standard of 17 seconds and in full gear, trained professionals. Every one of us is a military veteran. Every one of us has been in law enforcement for a period of time. And still very few people could get 17 seconds, especially around the legs, because the way you have these devices, these tourniquets set up, if you're watching me on the YouTube channel, you'll be able to see this for all you on the radio. I'm opening up the tourniquet. And if you have this set up properly, you can open it all the way up and go around the leg, underneath the leg, and then you have to hook it back through, tighten it, and then tighten the windlass, and then secure it. And hopefully then you stop the bleeding. But, you know, understand this. What happened when you got shot? Were you in the middle of a gunfight? Was it a Kanas, a sniper? You know, what's the situation? So that's hard to train for. So the way that we trained for it was by just, they would just physically smoke us all day long to the point of exhaustion. And then just tell you while you're walking up the mountain, carrying like a 200 pound dummy and telephone poles with all your freaking gear with a 35 or 25 pound, weight plate and your backpack. And I mean, like, plus all full gear. Then they would just yell, all right, tourniquet right leg. And everybody's got to fall down, get their tourniquet out. And nobody would make it to 17 seconds because you're tired. You're aggravated. You're hungry. You don't want to do this today. You know, you just want to make it up this stupid mountain and get back to the hotel and sit in the hot tub and pass out. But if professionals on that higher level have problems with it, how do I then expect you, the public, who doesn't train to the same standard, who doesn't get the same advantages of the equipment and the instructors, how do I get you to have this mindset? The only thing I can give you are the examples of these active shooters and talking to the victims, the survivors. I think I've told this story before. I'll tell it again. But the church that my wife and I went to back home, little bitty small Texas town, about 300 people lived there. We had an active shooter at our church. I wasn't there that day. We were up here in the DFW area. We hadn't come down to visit in a while. But at our church, the weekend before we come to visit, there was a domestic dispute between a man and his ex-wife, and it was over their daughter, and they were having a visitation rites at the church. My wife's grandmother was there to supervise the rites or the seeing of the child between the parents. And what ends up happening is the mother of the child, her brother, her sister, her father, and her mother ambush from across the street with rifles and shotguns, ambushes the father of the child and his fiance, killing them on the steps of the church. Blood was everywhere. I remember when I visited, I could still see the blood splatter that was all over the top of the roof. And I was talking with the preacher, who was also the justice of the peace. So he was also a judge. And, you know, of course, shortly after that, we started talking about active shooter, and I taught an awareness class there and, you know, helped out with creating some new countermeasures and beefing up the security for this little place. And I mean, we're talking about a church that maybe 30 people went to, and there was a killing there. So when you have these uppity, richy places that say, in our neighborhood, we never expected something like this to happen. You're not special. It happens everywhere. It can happen anywhere, at any time. That's why you need to be careful when you walk outside your door. That's why you need to lock your door when you go to sleep and have a gun close to you, because sometimes the bad guys make home visits. Anyways, two illegals were arrested in a mass shooting plot in Richmond, Virginia for July 4th. I think that's interesting that they were both two illegals. You know, where does that fit within the Democratic narrative, right? At a press conference Wednesday, Smith said that the police investigated Alvarado Dubon based on a tip that police got by someone who would only refer to as a hero citizen. Police investigated the claims and found that Alvarado Dubon was in possession of two rifles, one handgun, and 223 rounds of ammunition. I wonder if that's 223 rounds of ammunition or 223 ammunition. Anyways, he was arrested on July 1st while the other suspect was placed under surveillance and eventually arrested on the same charges on Tuesday. There's no telling how many lives the citizen hero saves from the one phone call. One phone call saved numerous lives on July 4th. This is coming from, I believe, the chief of police. We know that there was intent. We don't know the motive of the two men that were arrested. Smith addressed reports that one of the suspects has been deported several times and continued to reenter the country illegally, saying that it was frustrating that a person could continue to break the law and have an opportunity to still plan out a mass murder. Yeah, man. Look, I don't know if people understand this, but when we deport people, like typically, especially if it's a single male, not a family unit, but if it's a single male, they will almost immediately try to re-enter the country. This is where the living conditions are better, jobs are more available, and people are more likely to look the other way if you're illegal and you have a record, as long as you're willing to apply manual labor and you'll get paid cash. That's why they come over here. Or that's why at least one sect of people come over here. So once again, you know, I would love to hear what Homeland Security investigations say about these two guys. Hopefully we'll get an update from DHS on that. But once again, this ain't the same DHS that I left. Well, I mean, it is. They've just gotten worse. Here we go. Texas police arrest a man who was allegedly planning a mass shooting at an Amazon facility. Lot of alleged shooters that are out there. San Antonio man was arrested after people at his job reported him for allegedly saying that he was planning a mass shooting. Rodolfo V. Aceves, 19, was apprehended after San Antonio police responded to an Amazon delivery station where the teenager worked at around 10:30 a.m. on June 27th. Officers talked to several people who reported hearing Aceves say that he was planning a mass shooting at the facility. Hey, you know what's really interesting? The Uvalde shooter was Hispanic. This guy in San Antonio, Hispanic. The two guys that were up in Richmond, Virginia, that was planning a mass shooting, Hispanic. Where's the white people with guns narrative at, Democrats? Are you going to say that now every Hispanic man that's out there with a gun is a threat to our country? Probably not. Here, let's continue. Police detectives were then notified and then acquired credible information to believe that the comments were taken as a legitimate potential mass shooting threat. So, a while ago, I was talking about how red flag laws work and then they don't work, right? DHS used to always say, if you see something, say something. And I will admit that that's probably one of the only fair things that I could tell you is that if you see something, say something. But if it's because you don't like the person, red flag laws, don't say something then, right? There's a difference here. If I see a guy across the street digging a hole into the ground and putting a box that has wires coming out of it, very reminiscent of what happened to us in Iraq, I would probably see that and call 911 and respond, I can't respond to it anymore, not on that level. But I would report what I saw, the description of the person. And be honest with you, if I saw that, I would probably do a citizen's detention. That can be very frowned upon depending on what state and what city you're in. But I'm not going to let a guy who just planted an IED near me get away. I'll just deal with those repercussions. And you should typically be covered in the Good Samaritan's law for that, but. Anywho, that's see something, say something. Red flag laws is I see my neighbor who has a Trump flag and a MAGA sign buy a new rifle, and I got into an argument with them over politics, and now I'm going to call and make up a story. That's where red flag laws go. And it's documented happening too many times. And, you know, what happens whenever you have the politicians who think the same way as the neighbor who made the fake complaint, and they just go along with it, to include the judges. Judges are corrupt. Police can be corrupt. Lawyers are almost always corrupt. Not everybody. I get that. But come on, guys. You don't give that much of a rope to allow the hanging of anybody. There needs to be checks and balances here. You know, with this kid right here, if you look at the picture of this kid, he is just bizarre looking. You know, you can see the intent of evil in this kid's eyes. So rightfully, I think the takedown was a good choice. The investigation uncovered that additional evidence to support the threat of a mass shooting was there. Police received a warrant for Aceves' arrest and was taken into custody on a charge of making terroristic threats. Detectives also seized an AR-15 in his possession. Once again, the deadly AR-15. Quote, this case highlights the importance of community collaboration and appropriate responses. San Antonio Police Department wrote in Facebook, this is the essence of see something, say something. There you go. If not, for the witness who came forward, the incident could have resulted in a tragic outcome. There's an old saying in law enforcement, the police police the community, and the community police the police. Law enforcement does not work if the community is not actively engaged and involved. The problem is that over the past series, you know, I guess you say at least a decade now or more, police have been trained to think of the public almost as the enemy. As if the threat always comes from the public. And because of that, we're suspicious of everybody and every action. And hey, I'm guilty of that. You know, there's plenty of violence on the streets and law enforcement's always the target. But if we get to the point that the citizenry doesn't want to cooperate with us for an investigation, if we get to the point where the citizenry doesn't believe us, doesn't want us there, doesn't have the faith in us anymore, then what are we doing? You know, in Iraq and Afghanistan, one of the things that we always did was counterintelligence operations, but we're building the bridge between the people of Iraq and the coalition forces. And because we built that bridge, because we helped people, because we interjected ourselves into their lives and assisted them, we gained a little bit of trust. Now, once again, that trust was very questionable because it backfired on us quite a bit. And it could still hear within the United States. But we didn't view every single Iraqi as a terrorist. We just knew that they lived amongst them. Just like how we should not view every single citizen as a potential criminal, we shouldn't view every single citizen as a domestic violent extremist, as Homeland Security and the Biden administration has said, just because you voted a single way. You know, if you're a Democrat and you're listening to me and you voted for Biden, I may think you're crazy. You know, I may not agree with what you did, but I don't want to harm you. I don't want to take food away from your table. And I don't want to make you into my problem that I have to deal with. Hence, I don't want to make an enemy out of somebody who just thinks differently than me. However, this ain't your daddy's Democratic Party anymore. These people are so extreme in their own extremes. One day we're going to have to do something about it. Something's going to be done about it. May not be in my generation. Police officers from coast to coast come under attack over the 4th of July weekend. As Americans celebrate the founding of the nation over the weekend, crime rang out and left police officers from coast to coast the target of various attacks. Philadelphia, New York City, Chicago, and Baltimore were all rocked by shootings over the holiday weekend, leaving dozens dead and injured. I'm so shocked that all the bastions of the Democratic cities all erupted in violence over a weekend. Terribly shocked by that. As the dust settles from the holiday, reports show that police officers in cities both large and small came under attack, most notably in Philadelphia, where two officers were shot and injured. All right, let me speak on Philadelphia real quick, because I used to work in that area. I know the Benjamin Franklin Bridge very well. That area has had a continuation and growth of gang culture, gang warfare upon the streets. We've been seeing it recently with many daylight shootings of people. And up to the extent of having 100 people in a crowd and four or five suspects will open up gunfire into the crowd. So should we really be surprised that the Democratic bastion of Philadelphia is losing its law enforcement prowess? It's losing the security that it should have over that city? I'm not surprised. And I know probably a lot of the old cops that I used to talk to that were there, that I used to get coffee with, or what they would say, coffee with. I know plenty of them are fed up, pissed off, worn out. I know some buddies of mine that are within the New Jersey and Philadelphia area that cannot wait to retire. And then they're moving. They're moving out of these cities. The problem will be, do you make it? Do you make it to the retirement? And what's that retirement even going to look like by the time you do retire? Thousands attend a 4th of July concert and fireworks shown in Benjamin Franklin Parkway Monday evening in Philadelphia. But chaos erupted when shots were fired nearby, leaving two officers injured. And that's a horrifying thing. You don't ever want to hear about your brothers and sisters in blue being shot. Quote, I'm still going to put my uniform on every day and come to work to serve because that's what I do, says Philadelphia police officer Sergio Diggs. Hey, man, serve and protect. I get you. After he was grazed with a bullet in the forehead, he says, I'm very grateful I was able to come home to my family. They're the reason I go out here and I try to make a difference. And, you know, besides all the negative stuff that you hear about law enforcement all the time, always coming from the politicians, or it's coming from some person who just doesn't like authority, doesn't like law. The cops pulled me over one time and roughed me up. And half the time, the story is just completely blown out of the water. And most of the time, the problem comes from the person that the police are having to interact with. Now, I know there are some people out there who will say that the police hunt people down. I've never experienced it. I've never been a part of it, and I've never seen it. And I know that when cops do stuff like that, typically other cops come for them because we police our own, right? Or at least that's the way it's supposed to be. Maybe not in the FBI. But I understand what this guy means, you know, putting on the uniform, going to work, knowing that you may not come home. That is something that I dealt with for 10 years, 11 years, between me and my wife. You know, it's always in the back of your head, especially when you're going on these operations that can be potentially, very high risk, where you do have cartel that are wanting to assassinate people. I've been there for, you know, high valued court cases and protection details like that. You know, I've been there when we have all the riots going on and literally dealing with people who want to throw a Molotov cocktail on you and watch you burn to death. So, you know, that thought is always out there. But you have to remove that thought and worry and understand that you're there to serve the public and to protect the public, which means I want the bad guys to focus on me and not on the good guys, right? Not on the civilians. That's what law enforcement meant to me anyways. The weekend also proved dangerous for other officers in San Francisco. Shocked about that. Where a dozen officers were injured earlier Tuesday morning while trying to disperse a large crowd when suspects threw fireworks and glass bottles at them. There's also a video of it. This is on Fox News, so I would suggest you watch the video. Hey, look, man, this is something that we deal with in law enforcement all the time. And you may or may not be ready for it, but you know, you need, as law enforcement, I'm going to speak to cops right now. You need to be getting your heads out of the sand and realize that even if you don't like your job, even if you live in a small town where there's not a lot of crime, where things are slow, or if you're in a federal law enforcement agency where crime can be slow and not typically is everything going to happen bad in your area, bad can happen anytime, randomly. Just be prepared for it. It's what I used to tell my guys all the time. Just be ready for anything to happen. It doesn't mean walk around looking like you're ready to take down Saigon, but just be ready for the active shooter. You know, be ready for the violent confrontation with somebody who could be mentally deranged, who could be you know, suffering from alcoholism or could be high on PCP. You need to be ready mentally, you know, and cops not just mentally need to be ready. You need to be physically ready. You need to be in very good shape. If you go on one of these, you know, damned foot chases, you better be in good shape and your gear better be in good shape too. I can't tell you how many times I've sat there and watched officers try and make arrests and the radio goes flying and then their baton goes flying and magazines are falling off of them. Guns are falling off of them. You know, there's a certain breed of people out there that should be doing this job. And then there's about 80% of others who fall through the cracks. That's not a dig on anybody, but there's a mentality here that needs to be maintained. And it's not, it's just not. And other law enforcement officers will tell you the mentality of treating this mission every day the way it should be, of being aggressive on crime, is not done anymore. And it's not done anymore that way because, honestly, the population doesn't want it half the time. And then they do want it whenever it's too late. In Chicago, another unruly crowd targeted police cruisers in Portage Park by jumping on the hoods and punching windows. One Chicago officer was driving near the area when the crowd launched an object at the cruiser, breaking its windshield and sending the officer to the hospital with minor injuries. This is what I'm talking about. The police see the public who do actions like this, and it's not the entirety of the public, but you don't know who's in the crowds, and you don't know who they are when the crowds have dispersed either. Okay. But people put it in their minds that there are groups of people that want to kill me, that there are groups of people who want to hurt me. So because of that, I'm going to be hypervigilant and point my gun at anybody that raises their voice at me because I'm scared. Law enforcement has got into this mindset. And I'm not saying law enforcement officers are scared, but don't think that people don't get scared for their life. Don't think that people don't sit here and watch these videos when officers are stabbed to death, beaten to death, kidnapped and tortured, heads cut off, shot to death, run over. Cops see that. And they say, well, no one else is doing this job but me. So whenever I deal with something, I'm going to make sure that I go home. And that's why sometimes mistakes happen. We need to focus on training. Our officers need better gear. They need more confidence. I think we need more cops on the streets than we probably do politicians, right? I think we probably need more cops on the streets than we do the social workers. And I'm serious when I say that. You put more force on the streets, less people will want to confront that force and they'll take their business and move elsewhere. But not every city can do that. Of course, have you seen so far as what I'm reading? It's always the Democratic cities. Here we go. In Portland and in Maine, an unruly crowd began shooting fireworks at police officers, assisting a man who had been shot and assaulted on Monday. Fireworks, white phosphorus. I remember when they were throwing fireworks at us in Portland. You never knew when it was going to be the day when they took that firework and they just, you know, took it and rubbed it in some glue and rolled it on the ground to create some shrapnel and then tossed it over the fence at you. And we had multiple people injured by those fireworks. I mean, Dan, someone could die by it. But it's not like the crowd cares. The crowd doesn't care at all. And once again, it's another problem. When people get in this mindset, this mob mentality, you have that one anarchist guy who will be like, oh, now's a good time for the flaming bottle of kerosene or gasoline or whatever type of ignition source or whatever that they have in it. You know, people don't care. And those that do sit at home and they say, man, I can't believe we're having to do this in our country right now. Eventually, guys, what we're going to have to do is get out on the streets and combat and thwart these hoodlums, these hooligans, these kids who think that they can just run around and cause complete anarchy. Because I'll tell you what I would take. I would take an army of dads joined together at that police line in between me and Antifa. That would make me proud. You know, you're probably going to get smoke checked by pepper balls and 303 rounds and CS gas. So bring your gas mask. But somebody besides law enforcement is eventually going to have to step in and intervene. Because law enforcement is being controlled by the politicians. We're not allowed to do our job. The attacks continued as investigators remained on the scene for the next several hours. This is Portland, Maine. Officers were forced to deploy pepper balls into the groups that were targeting officers with mortar-style fireworks. Pepper balls are paintballs that are filled with Live-X, which is OC spray or pepper spray, but at 10 times the concentrate. Fun, very fun. The Portland Police Department said in a statement Tuesday that several officers were struck with sparks from the fireworks that were intentionally aimed at them. That's called a grenade. It's a grenade. but you can't fire back. Oh, no. Nope. Because if you shoot back while they're throwing stuff that could explode in your face and cause your head to disappear, oh, well. We had multiple times when they were throwing Molotov cocktails at us, broken beer bottles being flung at you, aiming for the eyes, the throat, the soft tissue areas with ball bearings and slingshots. Hey, dude, that hits you in the throat, go right through your throat. It could kill you. Or in your eye, it could kill you. And of course, we wore protection, but we still had guys that were getting hit all the time. We had guys getting hit in their junk by these freaking ball bearings. My boss got hit twice, I believe, in the same day. And took him out of the fight for a week or two. You know, it's like a cat and mouse game until eventually somebody within law enforcement says, we're not going to listen to the politicians and we're not going to allow the DA to arrest us. We're going to get out there and we're going to kick the ever living shit out of Antifa. And we're going to arrest every single one of them. And if the jail won't take them, then we will accommodate someplace and put them there. And if the mayor interferes, he's going to join them. And if the DA interferes, he's going to join them. Because the DA interfered with our operations, and the mayor interfered with our operations. They tried to set us on fire in the building. And you know what they told us? You need to wait till the flames get high enough inside the building to go outside and respond. And we had to sit there with our radios. And I was a supervisor on the scene, watching the smoke billow in the office that we were in, saying, is the smoke high enough for you, sir? Can I deploy my guys now? And if it wasn't for the fact that I had to complain and say, look, I'm about to just go do it anyways, I probably wouldn't have got the permission. It's absolute anarchy in some of these towns, and they allow it to happen. It's ridiculous. All right. I didn't even cover everything that I want. We were going to cover CERN and the connections between de Glock, the Nazi Bell, but we'll get onto that sometime, another time. My name is Doug Thornton. You've been listening to American Vindicta. I'm out of here. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.